Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show. Conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS radio network. If you'd like to call into the show, the phone number is 888-627-6008. Again, that's 888-627-6008. Let's begin today with a discussion of the political left in America and its raging hatred for President Trump and his movement, as he has referred to it, that is, his supporters, to make America great again. As former Marxist and former darling of the American left, David Horowitz, founder of the Freedom Center, and in my opinion, one of the great writers and thinkers of our time, has declared that the contemporary U.S. Democratic Party is the Communist Party. As he has noted, while there are still a few good people in and associated with the Democratic Party, it has been taken over by the American left and today advocates its policies and philosophy. In my observations, these ideas are often soft-pedaled to the gullible and politically naive masses in order to gain and keep their support. Most of the American mainstream media organizations enthusiastically support the left and are in solidarity with the leftist ideas and ideals, though again, being careful to soft-pedal these so as not to lose support of their millions of followers. After decades of propaganda and brainwashing, and having gained influence over and or control of much, if not most, of American pop culture, media, government, education, and social institutions, the left has been marching Americans steadily toward its goal of a socialist utopia through diminishing the United States as a global superpower and submerging it in their longstanding socialist dream of world government. Some people call this globalism, with accompanying sharply reduced or eliminated individual freedoms and prosperity, except, of course, for the elites who intend to be in power in this new world order. And, of course, they're telling you this is going to be utopia, so get in line and go along with it. Admittedly, while we're still a long way from the kind of madness that engulfed communist nations, resulting in long periods of mass murder, slavery, and terror, there's no doubt in my mind that we have been headed in that direction. Now along comes Donald Trump, who has, along with other people, recognized the situation and who seeks to fundamentally turn it around, bringing the country back to its constitutional foundation and restoring economic prosperity and world leadership. Just as Trump has sought, in his own words, to drain the swamp by exposing and removing many people in positions of power in our society who were thriving and enriching themselves in this march towards socialism, so too have these people become ever more desperate to eliminate Trump and his supporters as a political and ideological force which threatens their livelihoods and ideology. I would say that many of these people either cynically don't care what happens so long as they continue to prosper themselves, or they believe that the left's plan for America will actually be somehow a good thing overall, and even more preposterous, that they and their families, and perhaps many others, will do well under a socialist and world government. If you notice, almost all of the hysterical criticism of Trump is unspecific and based on vague declarations that Trump is somehow a racist, sexist, xenophobe, Islamophobe, some kind of gangster, and so on. He's just a bad guy, and he's got to go. You're supposed to believe. And don't question it. That's how the left works. Remember that lies, trickery, and fraud, that is, deception, are the stock and trade of leftists, for whom the means justify the end. In this case, their conception of an American utopia. Their ploy is always to portray the country as evil, oppressive, racist, etc., and undeserving of its prosperity and power, and in need of radical revolutionary change. Now, in his book, Why the Left Hates America, author Daniel J. Flynn does a great job, as the book's subtitle states, exposing the lies that obscured our nation's greatness. I wanted to read a little bit from his book, which was published, I believe, in 2002. Actually, there's a pretty good excerpt here on the jacket. He lists some quotes. One of the quotes is, "The American flag stands for hatred, warmongering, and imperialism." Another says, "Our free market system is responsible for killing and oppressing millions of people." And a third quote, "This country breeds racists and sexists." On the jacket cover after these quotes, the author states, "Is America really that bad? It is if you accept the lies and propaganda from the anti-American left in our own country. This dismal, distorted view of the greatest, freest nation in history comes from a left who would rather idealize Ho Chi Minh and Fidel Castro than honor George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, who burn down businesses and destroy property to protest free markets, and who fight alongside radical terrorists rather than against them. They trample the Constitution while hiding behind the First Amendment, and their idea of displaying the American flag is setting it on fire and parading it through the streets." Yes, this is a left comprised of people who truly hate their country, and they will stop at nothing to tear her down, smashing our liberty in the process. Further on in the book, I believe it's chapter 2, there's a subtitle called 20th Century Americanism. It states, "It is estimated that from 1917 to 1989, communist governments murdered nearly 100 million human beings. Many of the decimated met their demise through particularly barbaric acts. The Black Book of Communism details the mutilation of body parts by the Red Chinese. Quote, sometimes the pieces were cooked and eaten or force-fed to members of the victim's family who were still alive and looking on." The book continues, "In March 1919, thousands of Russian strikers were thrown into the Volga River with stones tied around their necks. One Romanian re-education jail, the last stop before death for many, was remembered by a former inmate. Quote, prisoners' whole bodies were burned with cigarettes. Their buttocks would begin to rot, and their skin fell off as though they suffered from leprosy. Others were forced to swallow spoonfuls of excrement, and when they threw it back up, they were forced to eat their own vomit. Cambodian Li Heng tells of a Khmer Rouge deserter who was forced to eat his own ears before being killed. Most did not die so graphically. A bullet to the back of the head, the hangman's noose, and deliberate starvation were each far more common and efficient methods of eradication. Heaven on earth would not come without the requisite sacrifices. Thus, the American left was willing to overlook the carnage. In fact, many leftists did more than remain passively silent about communist atrocities. They actively sought to import the same kind of totalitarian regimes that elsewhere promiscuously murdered their own citizens. Prominent leftists pledged their allegiance to the Soviet Union rather than the country of their birth. The individual embodiment of evil for the communists was the rich capitalist. As the world's richest nation and its most conspicuous enthusiast of free market economics, the United States of America became the collective embodiment of evil for the communists. Both the United States and the capitalists would have to be destroyed if communism were to triumph. Thus, being a communist and a patriotic American was inconclusive. Although special enmity was reserved for America, communist ideology dictated disloyalty to any government that was not communist. Lenin himself exemplified this tenet of communism when he worked for his own country's defeat in World War I. Lenin's concept of revolutionary defeatism sought to turn the imperialist war into a civil war. In layman's terms, Lenin called for communists to take advantage of wartime situations, or any crisis, by siding with their nation's enemies for the purposes of weakening the state and hastening the overthrow of the regime. American communists followed Lenin's example. The aim of the Communist Party in America since its inception has been the violent overthrow of the U.S. government. In 1921, its 1921 Constitution blatantly declares, quote, the Communist Party will systematically and persistently propagate the idea of the inevitability of and necessity for violent revolution and will prepare the workers for armed insurrection as the only means of overthrowing the capitalist state, end quote. And the book continues, unlike Tsarist Russia, the United States of America was and is a democracy. Calling for revolution in such a country bespeaks the arrogance of self-anointed arbiters decreeing what's right for the rest of us. While the party was not always as candid in its aims as it was in 1921, the destruction of the United States has forever remained the improbable goal of American communists. Let's listen to conservative radio host Rush Limbaugh recently discussing the left's panic over Trump. Play soundbite one, please.
You go back to the 8 years of Obama, new era of decline, lower your economic expectations. The days of your kids doing better than you economically, don't count on it. Economic growth, maybe 1.5% max. And we don't deserve any more, they said. We don't deserve any more because we need to pay the price for all the injustice that we had meted out over the world since our founding. This is what they believe. Now, we're 3 years removed from that. And where are we? We have record low unemployment. We have wages rising. And you know which wages are rising? Low-end wages are rising faster than any category in the country. People who make the least are seeing their wages increase more rapidly than any other group. We have African-American unemployment, record low all time. Hispanic unemployment, record low all time. We have 6.5, almost 7 million job openings in America. We have the stock market that's gained 10,000 points since Obama left and Trump took over. You think they're not panicked? They were on their way to chopping this country down to size. They were on the way to getting rid of the United States as a superpower for the purposes of globalism or whatever their desires were.
We have the so-called deep state's ongoing desperation and unrelenting efforts to get rid of Trump. We all know about the multi-year Russia collusion hoax that ultimately failed. However, it's still being kicked around. Now we are seeing the impeachment fraud being perpetrated on the American people. I'll have more to say about impeachment later in the program today, but before that, let's take a look at some prime examples of the anti-Trump hate that still consumes the left. Two of the most ardent Trump haters out there are famous actor Robert De Niro, who is, by the way, a longtime leftist and Democratic Party activist, and Democrat Congresswoman Maxine Waters of California. Let's listen to some of their remarks about Trump and explore why they may be so committed to getting rid of Trump. Let's start with De Niro. Here are some excerpts from De Niro recently appearing on the late-night talk show of Stephen Colbert, another highly paid left-wing propagandist masquerading as a funny man, and on CNN's Reliable Sources show with never-Trumper Brian Stelter. And lastly, on CBS News October 8, 2016, just before Trump was elected. Play soundbite two, please.
Oh, boy. You've played a lot of gangsters throughout the years. A lot of people who have prosecuted actual mob bosses say Trump runs things like it's the mob. How do you think you actually defeat a mobster?
Well, that's a good question.
It's what I do, Bob.
He's the... Well, he's like the Teflon Don, you know. And Giuliani, of all people, the way I understand it, he used the RICO Act to go after gangster families. And so it's unusual that he now is representing this gangster first family, if you will.
Yeah.
So... it's the whole situation is beyond understanding.
It is, yeah. And kind of heartbreaking, too. You see people otherwise who have been heroes fall.
Yeah, to me, it's more than heartbreaking. It's a really, really serious situation we're in. I don't want to bring people down, but I mean...
No. It's like, yeah, I think they came pre-down.
Yeah, well, it's like a pall around, you know, certain things. It's like living in an abusive household. You feel you don't know what's going to happen next. What crazy thing is going to happen next? What's going to make you say, what the hell's going on?
Yeah. And because only one angry person gets to say what is real.
Exactly.
What the truth is.
Exactly. And the truth is not from him. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Hey, welcome back to Reliable Sources. I'm Brian Stelter. You may have noticed last season on Saturday Night Live, there were some appearances from one Robert Mueller, but actually played by Robert De Niro. Now Mueller seems to be history, but De Niro has a lot to say about the real life President Trump. And he's here with me now in New York. Thank you for being here, sir.
Glad to be here.
We've been trying to book you for a while. And then all of a sudden this week, we've got an impeachment inquiry. And I'm even more curious for your sense of what's going on. You've been calling for the president to be impeached. Are you satisfied with what the Democrats are now doing?
Yeah, I think they have no choice but to have an impeachment inquiry. It has to happen. I mean, there's no way around it.
Do you think the president should resign? Because I this morning in the Connecticut Post, which is one of the biggest papers in the state of Connecticut, I believe this is the first major paper to call for him to step down. That would be quite a dramatic development.
I don't think he's capable of resigning. Bill Maher a couple of weeks ago said that it's going to be difficult getting him out of the White House, especially if he wins marginally, if he loses marginally.
Do you have that fear as well that he wouldn't leave?
Yeah, he'll say it's rigged or this or that. He'll find this guy has done everything possible, much worse than I ever thought ever. The day after he was elected, I said, well, you know, give him a chance. You never know. You'll see. But he's worse than I ever could have imagined.
I wonder, as an actor, do you ever look at the president and think he's performing, like he's playing or an act or something?
In some ways, I think he is, but I think that it's, as I think some of these other pundits on Fox are too.
I mean, he's so blatantly stupid. He's a punk. He's a dog. He's a pig. He's a con, a bullshit artist, a mutt who doesn't know what he's talking about, doesn't do his homework, doesn't care, thinks he's gaming society, doesn't pay his taxes. He's an idiot. Colin Powell said it best. He's a national disaster. He's an embarrassment to this country. It makes me so angry that this country has gotten to this point, that this fool, this bozo, has wound up where he has. He talks how he wants to punch people in the face. Well, I'd like to punch him in the face. This is somebody that we want for president? I don't think so. What I care about is the direction of this country. And what I'm very, very worried about is that it might go in the wrong direction.
As I said, De Niro is a longtime left-wing Democrat, political activist, who, according to the online encyclopedia Wikipedia, lobbied Congress in 1998 against impeaching then-President Bill Clinton, supported Hillary Clinton for president, engages in frequent foul-mouthed public denunciations of President Trump, and has endorsed Pete Buttigieg, or Buttigieg, however this guy pronounces his name, the mayor of Indianapolis, as De Niro's choice for the Democratic Party presidential nominee in 2020. It's interesting that De Niro made that remark about Trump saying he wants to punch someone. I believe that happened when someone had rushed up and tried to disrupt the rally Trump was at and was taken away, and Trump said something to the effect that it makes you want to punch him out. And he was immediately decried as advocating violence. It was just this terrible, terrible thing. Meanwhile, De Niro, who says he wants to punch Trump in the face, was subsequently went to the White House and was given the Medal of Freedom by then-President Obama before Trump took office. It shows you the hypocrisy of the two sides and how, the hypocrisy of the people on the left who seem to get away with doing the same thing that they are criticizing other people for. The fabulously wealthy De Niro, for me, embodies the kind of radical leftist that had long flourished in Marxist-loving Hollywood. In doing my prep for the show, I came across an interesting commentary on Hollywood from back in 2010, but which seemed to me just as relevant today as it was then. It was from a website called imdb.com. And it was a commentary titled Left-Wing Propaganda in TV and Cinema, Part 1, by the author called himself Fedor 8. It was created in about this time in December 2010. It states, there's a rumor going around that Hollywood and European cinema are firmly in the hands of the left, and that they misuse this enormous media power to disseminate their twisted political beliefs among the mostly ignorant sheep, aka the filmgoers. Their most common victim? The naive, brainwashed, dirty film buff who believes everything Hollywood and French cinema tell him, and who takes movies far too seriously as an art form, even going so far as to take the flicks as a source of information. Since World War II, the success of capitalism in the West has had Western Marxists fuming and foaming at the mouth. How does one fight against something that works, especially when one's own alternative ideology has been proven time and time again to be an utter failure? Marxists tried taking concrete physical action by taking their misguided cause to the streets in the late 1960s, but it didn't work. Aside from a few Soviet-influenced leftist college professors and a bunch of bored-slash-gullible students, the masses pretty much did not want a red revolution, in the slightest. There has been an ongoing, persistent, and dirty propaganda campaign by all left-wing elements to discredit capitalism, hence democracy, in every way imaginable. Nitpicking through its flaws, because capitalism isn't perfect, plus making up blatant lies about it. These are the basic methods used. Marxists realize that the only way to fight something that works in practice is to smear it in theory, or fantasy, in this case. On the big and small screen, film and television offer the best platforms for disseminating nonsense and fallacies. You simply make a claim, without having to prove it. A perfect vehicle for anyone whose sole aim is to mislead. Western Marxists will never be appeased until they help bring about the fall of capitalism and democracy. They're on a mission. It's up to us viewers whether or not this decadent propagandist machine, fueled by sociopaths, quasi-intellectuals, and other misanthropes, will eventually bring about the long-awaited negative change and instability, two things Marxists long for with all their hearts. Economic downfall comes right after moral disintegration and all-encompassing dumbing down. Two more elements Marxists work at ceaselessly. The goal? Destroy the capitalist democratic West from within, and then take over once there is economic chaos, that is, when there is fertile ground for political extremism. And then establish a hardcore dictatorship in which a select elite of sociopaths, a select elite of psychopaths will walk all over millions in order to expand their own wealth under the guise of creating a new man. By the way, this laughable notion of creating a new man, that is, this hopeless undertaking of making gigantic artificial evolutionary leaps, is pretty much what the Nazis had envisioned as well. Just one of the many parallels between National Socialism and Marxism, that is, one of the many similarities between the two extremes which Western left-wing propaganda prefers to keep quiet about, with good reason. Just to avoid any misunderstandings, the list includes blatant propaganda films disguised as objective documentaries, that is, fiction pieces, but it also includes harmless entertainment flicks that hadn't been made with the sole and express purpose of promoting leftist ideology, but into which the filmmakers threw in more hidden, that is, less obvious messages. I thought it was certainly interesting piece here. I didn't see any specific list of propaganda films here, but hell, take your pick. Here's an audio from an online video done by actor John Voight, a long and firm supporter of President Trump, before the 2016 presidential election, in which Voight makes reference to De Niro. Will you please play soundbite 3?
My dear fellow Americans, we are all feeling tremendous anxiety with only a few weeks left to the election. This will be the most important election in American history. We were once a country of freedom, and now we're becoming a country of tyranny. We are witness to our own people burning down and looting our cities, Ferguson, Missouri, Milwaukee, Orlando, Florida, Baltimore. We are all witness to our own people killing our policemen. Islamic terrorists have killed thousands of people all over our country, and Hillary and Obama want to be politically correct and pretend all the killings are not happening. How many Americans are aware of George Soros, an evil man who turned hundreds of Jewish people over to the Nazis to be exterminated during World War II? He was interviewed on 60 Minutes and was asked, does he feel guilty for what he has done? And arrogantly he said, absolutely not. If I didn't do it, someone else would have. Soros is a billionaire who made most of his money manipulating currencies and almost bankrupting many countries. He supports hate groups who are responsible for taking down our cities. And he is a close friend of Hillary Clinton and a major supporter of her campaign. Robert De Niro is a millionaire, as are so many of our Hollywood stars who are voting for Hillary and who have absolutely no tolerance for anyone of a different opinion, forgetting that that is what our country is founded on, freedom of choice. But they will not be affected by Hillary's open borders. Only our poor and middle class will suffer. Thousands of refugees will flood our nation, and no one will know the good guys from the bad guys. It will kill our economy, which is at an all-time low now under the years of Obama's presidency. And Hillary boasts of how proud she will be to continue Obama's legacy. No one can afford health insurance now. Prices for health care have gone through the roof thanks to Obamacare. Our once reasonable health care is gone. With Hillary as president, we will lose our Second Amendment with our right to bear arms. Freedom of religion will be attacked. And Hillary will try to stop all conservative voices on TV and radio. Our highest courts will become socialist. And she will restrict what America was founded on, our freedom to become a small business owner and pursue our own personal dreams. She has blood on her hands from the Benghazi terrorist raid. Four of our American patriots died. And when the parents stood over their loved ones' coffins, she lied to them about the cause of their sons' deaths. The pendulum of freedom is not balanced. Hillary and her followers are on a crude campaign to stop and degrade all of Trump's followers. Her words were echoed loud and clear for all Americans to hear. Hillary said, "Trump's followers are a basket of deplorables. They are unredeemable. May God protect the real truth. And may Donald Trump win this presidency. He will save our America, and he will certainly make it great again."
Now let's take a look at Maxine Waters, who's been described as one of the most corrupt politicians in Washington. Here are a few clips from 2017 through this year of Waters' raging hostility toward Trump and his administration, beginning with an appearance on CNN's Chris Fredo Cuomo show, and then with more from CNN and Fox Business and PBS NewsHour, and speaking before the House of Representatives just earlier this month. Play soundbite four, please.
Play some sound from a recent LGBT event that you were at that has drawn a lot of criticism. Let's listen to it.
Wow. What a moving evening this is. I am sitting here listening, watching, absorbing, thinking about Ali, even though I never met him. And with this kind of inspiration, I will go and take Trump out tonight.
Those words have been interpreted as an attempt on the president's life.
Oh,
how did you intend them?
That's absolutely ridiculous. Nobody believes that a 79-year-old grandmother who is a congresswoman and who has been in Congress and in politics for all of these years talking about doing any harm. The only harm that I may be doing to the president is I want him impeached. And those people who are so opposed to my leadership on impeachment are organizing the right wing, the white nationalists, the KKK. They've organized an effort to try and, of course, defeat me in my election coming up and to discredit me. Everybody knows that I'm on the front lines, not talking about any physical harm to anybody, but I am talking about impeachment, and I'm not going to stop.
What's happening in America? Civility out, shaming and shunning in. On the same weekend, White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders is asked to leave a restaurant. Democratic Congresswoman Maxine Waters says don't let the public shaming stop with Sanders.
And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome anymore, anywhere.
The congresswoman pushing more division in a nation already seemingly divided.
Democrat California Congressman Maxine Waters, she is tripling down. She is making no apologies for her calls to confront Team Trump and instead is pinning the blame entirely on him. Even Democrats are denouncing her rhetoric, as they should. Listen to what Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer is saying.
If you disagree with someone or something, stand up. Make your voice heard. Explain why you think they're wrong. And why you're right.
What he has done since he has been president has been outrageous. He has not provided legitimate leadership. And this last action that he was involved with Nunes, and I mean, I do believe that he was involved, they concocted a scheme by which it would appear that somehow his accusation about being wiretapped was real. And he tried to convert that into talk about possible surveillance where his people were picked up, you know, doing surveillance. And so he has done so many things to show that he doesn't understand government. He's not willing to learn. He doesn't learn from his mistakes. Instead of learning, he gets up the next morning and tweets something else all over again. Most people believe that he's about diversion, that he's about keeping people from really dealing with the issue. We want to know whether or not there was collusion. We want to know about the hacking into the DNC and the interference with our elections. And I really want to know, because I know if we can prove collusion, that he is impeachable. Ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately, the rules of debate won't allow me to cite all of the reasons why this president should be impeached. There are many. However, Madam Speaker and members of this House, to quote the late Maya Angelou, when someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time. This day was not inevitable, but it was predictable, because this president has shown himself time and time again to believe that he is above the law, and he has no respect for our Constitution or our democracy. Based on all that we know about Donald Trump, we could have predicted he would have abused the power of the president by corruptly soliciting the government of Ukraine and the Ukrainian President Zelensky to publicly announce investigations into his political opponent, former Vice President Joseph R. Biden. This impeachment resolution includes evidence that this president withheld $391 million of taxpayer funds that Congress appropriated for the purpose of providing vital military and security assistance to Ukraine to oppose Russian aggression, another blatant abuse of power. Our investigations revealed that this president advanced a discredited theory promoted by Russia, alleging that Ukraine, rather than Russia, interfered in the 2016 United States presidential election for corrupt purposes in pursuit of personal political benefit.
Okay, now in a minute, let's hear a segment from Fox's Swamp Watch program in which Steve Hilton on Maxine Waters. This program was done just after the 2018 midterm elections in which the U.S. House of Representatives was taken over by Democrats with their claims of Trump corruption. After hearing it, do you suppose this woman might have reason to fear a Trump presidency and pro-Trump Republican-controlled House of Representatives? Give it some thought. Play soundbite 5, please.
The Democrats are taking over the House, and that means some of their swampiest leaders are taking over some very important committees. In fact, one of them, who's in line to regulate Wall Street and the financial industry, has literally been called one of the most corrupt members of Congress. Yes, she's back. Maxine Waters is tonight's Swamp Watch. Maxine Waters has, of course, become notorious for her role in whipping up political incivility and violence.
If you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome.
But that is far from the first stain on her record in Congress. For starters, Waters was the subject of a House Ethics Committee investigation in 2010. In the midst of the financial crisis, she arranged a meeting between then-Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson and top executives of One United, a bank. One United later got $12 million in bailout funds, handily enough for Maxine Waters, whose husband was a major shareholder. In 2004, Maxine Waters and her husband, Sidney Williams, each separately bought One United stock worth between $250,000 and $500,000. Her husband also held separate stock worth another $250,000 to $500,000. That same year, Waters sold her One United stock, and her husband sold somewhere between a quarter and a half of his holdings, but he became a member of the bank's board and remained there until 2008. By the time Maxine Waters scheduled the meeting with the Treasury Secretary, her husband owned approximately $350,000 in One United stock, all of which would have likely gone down the drain without the bailout money she helped secure. How lovely for Maxine to have the power to protect her investments with taxpayer bailouts. What a true woman of the people she is. The scandal led Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington to name Waters one of the most corrupt members of Congress in 2011. It's no surprise, then, that this champion of the poor and downtrodden owns multiple properties in California, including a multi-million dollar home that isn't even in her district. Here's another way Maxine Waters brings in the cash. Slate mailers. They're sample ballots that Waters sends to about 200,000 voters in the Los Angeles area, highlighting the local officials that Waters endorses. What's wrong with that, you might say? Good for her for being an engaged activist. Here's the catch. She charges tens of thousands of dollars to be listed on her mailer. When San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom was running for lieutenant governor, he paid Waters $45,000 for a spot. Senator Kamala Harris paid $33,000 to be on the mailer when she was running for state attorney general. And guess who's in charge of the organization that runs this scheme? None other than Waters' daughter, Karen. But her husband's in on it too. He reportedly made nearly $500,000 working part-time as a consultant to a municipal bond underwriting firm, which he used to court some of the politicians to pay for a Slate mailer endorsement. In one response to reporters' questions about these schemes to enrich her family, Waters said, quote, "They do their business and I do mine." Well, that's one way of putting it, I suppose. Her husband said his wife files all the proper disclosure of his clients, and beyond that, you can't ask me anything about my business. Of course not. You're making money off the back of your wife's position as a member of Congress. How dare anyone question that? But the corruption goes much deeper. With Maxine Waters, it's institutional corruption. Look what she recently said about the banks once she's chair of the Financial Services Committee.
I'm going to do to you what you did to us.
So what exactly did the financial services industry do to you, Maxine? Lined your pockets, that's what. Here's a few examples. You took $10,000 from American Express, $11,000 from UBS, $10,000 from State Farm Insurance, $10,000 from Aflac Insurance, $10,000 from the Managed Funds Association, $10,000 from the Mortgage Bankers Association, $10,000 from the National Association of Federal Credit Unions, $10,000 from the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors. All told, Waters has brought in over $230,000 from the securities and investment industry and over $330,000 from the insurance industry since she became ranking member of the Financial Services Committee in 2012. Once she's the chair of that committee, you can bet her conflict donations will skyrocket as a result. She also brings in plenty of cash from lobbyists whose clients she regulates. Now, this one is so unbelievable, I thought it wasn't true. But it is. One of those lobbyists is Mike Roos, who previously served with Waters in the California State Assembly. In 2009, he was representing a client called Nehemiah Corp, which had significant business interests in the mortgage industry. Waters, his friend of 30 years, was then in Congress and chairman of the Financial Services Housing Subcommittee. So, they worked together to push legislation that just happened to benefit his client's bottom line. But this turned out to be much more than a favor for a friend. A close look revealed that Waters' lobbyist friend paid her husband $15,000 as a consultant at the same time she was sponsoring the legislation. Maxine Waters is up to her neck in the swamp. She's used her public office to protect her investments, benefit her friends, and enrich her family, all while taking hundreds of thousands of dollars in conflict donations from members of the industries that she regulates.
Now let's talk a little about the left's ongoing impeachment hoax. As you probably know, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is holding up sending the articles of impeachment to the most of the House Democrats voted for to the Senate, where the issue of President Trump's impeachment will be decided. There's been a lot of discussion in the media about how all this is playing with the American people. I thought a good summary of this ridiculous attempt to remove the president. The president was contained in a, oddly enough, an advertising flyer I got in the mail recently from the pro-Trump Newsmax organization promoting its Newsmax magazine. I wanted to read a little of it to you. Obviously, this is pro-Trump stuff, but that's what the whole program's about, too. This is a flyer that came out. It's titled, Nine Reasons Why Impeachment is a Fraud and Why, If It Succeeds, Nobody is Saved from the Deep State's Reach. Christopher Reddy, publisher and CEO of Newsmax, starts out with a letter. Dear fellow Americans, here we stand at a great crossroads in this country's history with the Democratic Party and their allies coiled to strike the office of our president, armed with nothing but phony claims, half-truths, and outright falsehoods for their impeachment inquiry. Almost from the day President Trump was inaugurated, mainstream media outlets like CNN and MSNBC were openly calling for his impeachment. Here's the truth. Donald Trump's only real crime was that he won the 2016 election fairly and squarely. From the beginning, false storylines such as Russia collusion have been about overturning the 2016 election result. So far, the liberal establishment failed in doing so. Now, almost in the ninth inning, Nancy Pelosi and her allies have pulled the trigger on impeachment. Why, you ask? Representative Jim Jordan said it best. Quote, Democrats are trying to impeach President Trump just 13 months before the American people go to the polls. They are doing it because they know they can't remove President Trump otherwise. Close quote. And Ruddy continues, with the mainstream media beholden to the deep state, determined to poison the minds of all Americans with their liberal agenda, Newsmax magazine has become a refreshing antidote. Yes, Newsmax is one of, Newsmax TV is also pretty good if you want to get the other side of things. Now, going into their little flyer a little further, they get to the nine reasons why impeachment is a fraud. They mentioned, they start out, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's announcement authorizing an impeachment inquiry, the latest in a series of Democratic attempts to reverse the results of the 2016 presidential election, is replete with dishonesty and outright fraud. And they go on and on. They start with the reason. Reason number one, the president's remarks did not violate any law. Democrats point to the transcript of Trump's July 25 conversation with Ukraine's newly elected president, Volodymyr Zelensky, as evidence of a crime. Specifically, they hone in on Trump's words, quote, I would like you to do us a favor, quote, quote. A favor being to assist the United States in investigating the activities of a Ukrainian company that had hired Hunter Biden, son of former Vice President Joe Biden. They claim that this may be evidence of a bribery or extortion and point to Trump's statement that, quote, the United States has been very, very good to Ukraine, close quote, as incentive. But even given the most cynical interpretation possible, these statements do not come close to bribery or extortion. And they go on. They mentioned, number two, the president's request for assistance is not an abuse of power. Number three, the request for assistance was made pursuant to treaty. Number four, Democrats have no quid pro quo. Number five, Pelosi rushed to judgment. Number six, the whistleblower's complaint wasn't one. Number seven, Trump hid nothing. Number eight, Pelosi said she did not want to impeach Trump, but the facts say otherwise. And number nine, why not let the people decide? Each of these is followed with the commentary, but we don't have time to go into this any further. But you can see that there's a lot of dispute here about what's going on. You heard Maxine Waters claiming all this evidence of corruption and so on and so forth. It's nonsense to me, but anyway, let's go ahead and move on here. Also, here are some comments on the impeachment hoax by former White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders on Fox News December 19, along with parts of a speech Senate President Mitch McConnell made to the Senate that same day, in which McConnell sums up the Democrats' longtime plot to impeach Trump. Play soundbite six, please.
Sanders, former White House press secretary, Fox News contributor with us today. And Sarah, I know you were listening a short time ago with Chuck Schumer, Mitch McConnell before that, and the excellent panel we had here today. Well, where do you think we are over the past 14 hours of these headlines in Washington? Or can you predict or give us an expectation for what we can expect over the next 30 days or even perhaps over the next year? I mean, where are you on where things are as we see them now?
Look, I wish I had a crystal ball to tell you what the next 30 days look like or certainly what the next year look like. I think one of the biggest takeaways that I've seen take place over the last 24 hours and even the last week is that this impeachment sham is doing nothing but helping Donald Trump get reelected in 2020. I think it's having the opposite effect that the Democrats want. We've seen a complete shift in support for impeachment. I think throughout the process of the hearings, we saw that there was no wrongdoing by the president. And now you see a process where the House Democrats forced this down America's throat and said, we have to hurry up. We have to get this done, so much so that they didn't even allow due process. process to play out. And now we're hearing from Nancy Pelosi. We have all the time in the world and we're going to sit and wait and not even send it to the Senate. I think the American people are tired of watching this. I think they're happy with things the way that they are under this president. We have a booming economy, and the country is doing infinitely better under this president than we have under his predecessor. I think people want to see him get reelected, and I think this is just further pushing them into Donald Trump's camp for 2020.
Last night, House Democrats finally did what they had decided to do a long time ago. They voted to impeach President Trump. Over the last 12 weeks, House Democrats have conducted the most rushed, least thorough, and most unfair impeachment inquiry in modern history. Now, their slapdash process has concluded in the first purely partisan presidential impeachment since the wake of the Civil War. The opposition to impeachment was bipartisan. Only one part of one faction wanted this outcome. The House's conduct risks a deeply damaging the institutions of American government. This particular House of Representatives has let its partisan rage at this particular president create a toxic new precedent that will echo well into the future. That's what I want to discuss right now. The historic degree to which House Democrats have failed to do their duty and what it will mean for the Senate to do ours. So let's start at the beginning. Let's start with the fact that Washington Democrats made up their minds to impeach President Trump since before he was even inaugurated. Here's a reporter in April of 2016. Donald Trump isn't even the Republican nominee yet, but impeachment is already on the lips of pundits, newspaper editorials, constitutional scholars, and even a few members of Congress, April 2016. On Inauguration Day, 2017, the headline in the Washington Post, "The campaign to impeach President Trump has begun." That was day one. In April 2017, 3 months into the presidency, a senior House Democrat said, "I'm going to fight every day until he's impeached." That was 3 months into the administration. In December 2017, 2 years ago, Congressman Jerry Nadler was openly campaigning to be the ranking member on the House Judiciary Committee, specifically because he was an expert on impeachment. That's Nadler's campaign to be the top Democrat on Judiciary. This week wasn't even the first time House Democrats have introduced articles of impeachment. It was actually the seventh time. They started less than 6 months after the president was sworn in. They tried to impeach President Trump for being impolite to the press, for being mean to professional athletes, for changing President Obama's policy on transgender people in the military. All of these things were high crimes and misdemeanors, according to Democrats. Now, this wasn't just a few people. Scores of Democrats voted to move forward with impeachment on three of those prior occasions. So let's be clear. The House's vote yesterday was not some neutral judgment that Democrats came to with great reluctance. It was the predetermined end of a partisan crusade that began before President Trump was even nominated, let alone sworn in. For the very first time in modern history, we've seen a political faction in Congress promise from the moment a president election ended, they would find some way to overturn it. A few months ago, Democrats' three-year-long impeachment in search of articles found its way to the subject of Ukraine. House Democrats embarked on the most rushed, least thorough, and most unfair impeachment inquiry in modern history. Chairman Schiff's inquiry was poisoned by partisanship from the outset. Its procedures and parameters were unfair in unprecedented ways. Democrats tried to make Chairman Schiff into a de facto special prosecutor, notwithstanding the fact that he is a partisan member of Congress who'd already engaged in strange and biased behavior. He scrapped precedent to cut the Republican minority out of the process. He denied President Trump the same sorts of procedural rights that houses of both parties had provided to past presidents of both parties. President Trump's counsel could not participate in Chairman Schiff's hearings, present evidence, or cross-examine witnesses. The House Judiciary Committee's crack at this was even more ahistorical. It was like the Speaker called up Chairman Nadler and ordered one impeachment. Rush delivery, please. The committee found no facts on its own, did nothing to verify the Schiff report. Their only witnesses were liberal law professors and congressional staffers. So, Mr. President, there's a reason. The impeachment inquiry that led to President Nixon's resignation required about 14 months of hearings, 14 months, in addition to a special prosecutor's investigation. With President Clinton, the independent counsel's inquiry had been underway literally for years before the House Judiciary Committee actually dug in. Mountains of evidence, mountains of testimony from firsthand fact witnesses, serious legal battles to get what was necessary. This time around, House Democrats skipped all of that, spent just 12 weeks. More than a year of hearings for Nixon, multiple years of investigation for Clinton, and they've impeached President Trump in 12 weeks. So let's talk about what the House actually produced in those 12 weeks. House Democrats' rushed and rigged inquiry yielded two articles of impeachment. They are fundamentally unlike any articles that any prior House of Representatives has ever passed. The first article concerns the core events which House Democrats claim are impeachable, the timing of aid to Ukraine. But it does not even purport to allege any actual crime. Instead, they deploy the vague phrase, abuse of power.
No holds barred, like
abuse of power, to impugn the president's action in a general, indeterminate way. Speaker Pelosi's House just gave in to a temptation that every other House in history has managed to resist. Let me say that again. Speaker Pelosi's House just gave in to a temptation that every other House in our history has managed to resist. They impeach a president whom they do not even allege has committed an actual crime known to our laws. They've impeached simply because they disagree with a presidential act and question the motive behind it. In the House last night, the vote did not reflect what had been proven. It only reflects how they feel about the president. The Senate must put this right. We must rise to the occasion. There's only one outcome that is suited to the paucity of evidence, the failed inquiry, the slapdash case. Only one outcome suited to the fact that the accusations themselves are constitutionally incoherent. Only one outcome will preserve core precedents rather than smash them into bits in a fit of partisan rage because one party still cannot accept the American people's choice in 2016. It could not be clearer which outcome would serve the stabilizing, institution-preserving, fever-breaking role for which the United States Senate was created and which outcome would betray it. The Senate's duty is clear. The Senate's duty is clear. When the time comes, we must fulfill.
I thought it was a pretty good speech. But of course, I'm on his side. But we're hearing and seeing a lot of confident talk on the political right about how the bulk of the voters will see through the impeachment plot and turn Democrats out of office over it. I'm not confident of that. I wish I was. Let's not underestimate the enormous power in the hands of the Democrats and the rest of the political left in this country to influence public opinion. No doubt tens of millions of Americans actually believe in this nonsense and will continue to support Democrats in the upcoming national and local elections next year. And sure, lots of people also will see through the lies and trickery and will support Trump. But will there be enough of them? The fate of the nation, our civilization, and the free world hangs in the balance. Remember what ancient Oriental philosopher Lao Tzu said, quote, "There is no greater danger than underestimating your opponent," close quote. That's it for another show, folks. As always, I hope you found it worth your while. Look for us 2 weeks from today in this same slot, time slot. Meantime, we wish you a safe, prosperous, and very happy New Year, and a good rest of your night.